you know, it started on that baptism. You know, the little McIlvaney guy, he came out of the water pretty easy. You know, I kind of lifted him right up out of there. And then by the time we got to Corey, it was like, took everything I had. I'm still recovering, actually, from that. We had some big dudes that went in the water that weekend. But what a great weekend. Fantastic weekend. We give you all the glory, give God all the glory for that. And just thankful, you know, for God's work and his activity in our church and in the folks that call First Baptist home. Just absolutely grateful. As we get started, I invite you to take your Bibles. We're going to go to Exodus 17 this morning. As you're turning there, there are places where we serve, where there are, man, it's really fun to watch really gifted people do what they do, right? I mean, you watch them and you look at them, you go, man, they're in the right spot. And then there are occasionally times in the church, we don't like to talk about it, but there are occasionally times in the church where there are people in spots doing the work of ministry, and it's evident to everybody that's just not a good fit. You ever seen somebody like that? You ever encountered something like that? I've had some moments like that. Okay, and one of them was one of the first churches I worked at right out of college was this little tiny church plant, and part of my deal was that I was kind of like the fill-in on Sunday morning wherever there needed to be help, and we had a run of time where the couple who kind of manned the nursery, okay, in our church was gone for several weeks, and so Pastor looked at me and said, Jeff, you're our guy. Let it sink in for a minute. The 22, 23-year-old dude standing there in the nursery. Can you imagine this, moms? You're showing up, you're walking up, and you have your precious baby, and you're looking at me. Right? You talk about steps of faith for just a minute. And I worked in the nursery for those 3 or 4 weeks. Completely obvious to everyone, including me, this is not where my gifting is whatsoever, especially when I get distracted fairly easily, and you got like some little crawlers, you know, doing their thing, and, you know, you just kind of lose track. But, I mean, to try to get their attention, I thought it was a really good idea. We didn't do goldfish back in the day like that. I mean, that wasn't the cracker of choice. We still did Cheerios. It's probably like bad for kids now or something. But I tied a string around a Cheerio. No jokes. Just tied a string on a Cheerio, tossed it on the ground. Crawlers, right? They know where it is. Pull the string. Pull the string. You know, and then the best part is you just kind of toss it over their head again. They'll turn around and go because it's a cheer, right? You just know that I'm not the right guy in that place, all right? I bring all of this up because here's kind of the situation. We kick off all of our major ministry pieces here this week, including women's Bible study, which is just absolutely phenomenal. And there's a study on Thursday morning in 1 Peter that is going to be absolutely dynamic. Ladies, if you're signed up for it, the gal who wrote the material is as good of a Bible teacher you're ever going to hear. But the fact of the matter is, Michelle needs a little bit of help. She needs an adult 4 or 5 weeks of the fall. So not even the whole fall, but just 4 or 5 weeks to come and sit with kids so somebody like me isn't like tying a string around a goldfish and kind of yanking it on the floor to entertain kids. Does it make sense? That's the whole point of the story. You don't want me working Bible study, kids area, Thursday mornings. So if you actually care for children, okay, and you think you got some time on Thursday morning, you know, to fill in for 2 or 3, maybe 4 weeks this particular fall, would you give Michelle a call? She could really, really use just those 3 or 4 weeks filled in for this fall. Be a huge help, and it just kind of buttons up everything we're doing with Thursday Bible study. Anyway, so there you go. Take that with you. Take that image, too, of Dobish just absolutely messing up some children, you know, all those years ago. Who knows? I mean, my hope is that I didn't, you know, they still love Jesus in somewhere, and they don't hate the church. But Exodus chapter 17 this morning. Let's look at the first 7 verses. It says, then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin according to the command of the Lord, encamped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Okay, you can see the theme that's going on here, right? Since they've been delivered on this thing, there's now, they've gone into the wilderness, and now there's this testing that's taking place. There's this, we would call it in the church today, sanctifying that's taking place in the hearts and the minds. They've been delivered, they've crossed over the Red Sea, and now God is at work in their hearts, building and developing the trust within them, all right? And it says, therefore, the people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. I mean, notice too, the intensity, if you go back into chapters 15 and 16, the intensity is growing in these particular moments. And now at this point, I mean, they're not even trying to be polite. They're just coming out, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water. And they grumbled against Moses and said, why now have you brought us up from Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with this? Do to this people? A little more, and they will stone me. Okay? Moses is even asking questions now at this point. And then the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He named the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Why don't you pray with me for just a second? God, we love you. This morning we'd ask that you would speak to our hearts. Father, I pray that you'd help us to see the main thing, that we'd see the most important thing in this passage, and Father, that it would draw us close to you. Father, that we would be that we would love you, that we would enjoy you, that we would treasure you. Father, that we would glorify you. And Father, you would send us into the week that you have in front of us for your honor and for your glory. And we want to tell you we love you and we'll praise you in the great name of Jesus. Amen. In life, There are warnings that are given to us at times, right? I mean, it starts really young. You know, when we're kids, you know, your mom and dad, they love you enough to tell you, hey, don't play in the street, right? Right? They're, you know, like, for some of us, right? So others of you, I mean, you were invited to play in the street, but we'll work through those issues later. But the fact is, there's warnings in life. There are warnings that are given. And then even just in life, we've been given good advice that has stuck with us to help us navigate through the day-to-day, right? I mean, and let me just share some that has been shared with me. You guys will relate with some of this, right? Like early on, somebody who loved you, hopefully beforehand, looked at you and said, don't eat yellow snow, right? I mean, they loved you enough to tell you, just don't eat yellow snow, okay? If you grew up in the Midwest in South Dakota, you heard something along the lines of, hey, in the wintertime, don't lick the flagpole, okay? As a matter of fact, that became, though, actually, how about you just don't lick the flagpole, okay? All right, because that's just a bad proposition no matter what time of year it is, right? It's the flagpole, all right? Somebody one time, too, cheating doesn't pay in the long run, and lying pays less, okay? Pieces of advice that folks have given us. You can catch more flies with honey than with vinegar, all right? There's more than one way to skin a cat, okay? I don't know if you ever got hung up on that one. It's like, what are we doing skinning cats? But I mean, anyway, and why do you know that there's more than one way to do that? Look for the light at the end of the tunnel. Take it one day at a time. Heard this recently. Good is good. That's just good advice. I mean, good is good. Some days I think we're like programmed to think that it has to be phenomenal or it's bad. Hey, some days good is just good, all right? Thought that was strong. Life is long obedience in the same direction. Within the context of marriage, somebody once said that as a guy, you're a microwave, she's a crock pot, okay? My grandpa used to always say, young guys are like old trucks, Jeff. They drive better with a full load. Basically, he's telling me, Jeff, you have plenty of time to do a lot of things in life. Load up your schedule, all right? Treat rock stars like normal people. Treat normal people like they're rock stars. Jim Elliot once said, wherever you are, be all there. You know, that just advice. You guys are thinking of other things that have impacted you and kind of shaped you on this thing. But there are these moments in our life that have shaped our direction and how to navigate how we're going to live. Now, as Christ followers, we have this idea, I think we have this expectation that once we come into faith, once we leave darkness, we come into light, God saves us this way, that it's like it's this straight line to Him, right? That life is, you know, we're saved, and now it's this straight line of steady growth right to God, right? We start thinking that, when in reality, we don't get too far down the road, and we start to realize that we start off like that, and then it goes like this, goes like that, goes like this, does a couple of these things, right? And you're like this, you feel this way, right? You're like this and around, but eventually, right, you get there, and you start to sit back and go, wait a minute, how do I have the wisdom to do this thing, right? How do I get there to follow Jesus, all right? God has been good enough to give us certain warnings to make us sit up and start to recognize and realize potentially where we're at and where we can get tripped up. As a matter of fact, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul's writing, and he gives us a warning. It's real clear. It's really straightforward. I want to walk through it with you this morning because it sets up our passage. It says, "For I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased." Okay, now you should sit up, right? I mean, at this point in time, if you're reading this thing, you're going, wait a minute, what are we talking about? "For they were laid low in the wilderness. Now, these things happened as examples for us so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved." He's talking back about the Exodus. He's referring back to that significant moment in Israelite history to get their attention. Everybody, I mean, if you're an Israelite, if you're a Jew, the Red Sea, the deliverance, this thing is significant in your upbringing, your formation, your shaping this way. And Paul himself is looking to the people in Corinth and he's saying, hey, these things happened to be an example for us because deep down within us, we crave evil things. We crave things outside of that trust and pursuit and following of God, don't we? I mean, even today, we sit here today in Durango, there are cravings that we have. And he said, these things, I want you to pay attention. I want you to sit up in this moment and understand. I want to warn you on this, okay, as an example, so that you won't crave evil things as they did. Okay, so I put that out in front of us as we come and we look at this story because I don't want us to come to Exodus chapter 17 this morning and sit back and go, that's just a really neat story several thousand years ago about a bunch of Israelites, a bunch of grumblers. Okay, I want us to take this thing to heart and see where it goes because even Paul, a couple thousand years later, is sitting there looking at people going, hey, this is a problem. And we got to be aware about this, all right? And so we come, we look at this thing, and we come into Exodus chapter 17. And really, if we're looking at lists of advice, all right, here's one way to take a look at this thing from a spiritual perspective, where in these seven verses, there's like three things that we need to go and walk away and go, hey, let's not do these things, all right? So number one, it says do not test, okay? Do not test. That's number one. Do not test. Don't test the Lord on this thing, right? Look at verse 2. It says, "Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, 'Give us water that we may drink.' And Moses said to them, 'Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?'" Okay? Why are you testing the Lord in this moment? And then you go over to verse 7, and he named the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Okay? Now, here's the deal. They should have, in this particular moment, right, what they should have done is come together and they should have gathered for prayer and they should have waited for the Lord to provide, right? Because the Lord has provided. The Lord has provided big time for them, right? And not just over like years and years of time, but over the last 30 days, he's provided for them. Okay? This is what they should have done. They should have known that God would take care of them. We've seen all of this before. We've seen you come through with water, you know, back where, you know, it was all bitter and everything else. And we threw a stick in the water and now it was sweet. And then we were really hungry and you started dropping that the sweet. All right, there we are. So, you know, we've seen you drop on this. We've seen you drop this flake-like material that's super sweet and put it in front of us. You've provided for us this way. But instead, they grumble and they quarrel. That word quarrel, for instance, you have to understand, has overtones of physical confrontation. There's pushing, there's shoving, maybe even a few fisticuffs on this thing. As a matter of fact, it leads Moses to say, hey, they're going to stone me. This is where we're at in the quarreling. This is where it's gone. Have you ever gotten to that point? You don't have to admit that out loud, okay? In Exodus chapter 15, they grumble. God tests, right? Exodus 16, they grumble. God tests them. Now we come to Exodus chapter 17, they're grumbling and they're saying, you know what? No more tests from God. We're going to test God. This is where we're going to end up on this thing. We're going to test him. And so why do we test? Right? When you think back on this, why were you tested going through school? Because we needed to learn, right? There needed to be a gauge of progress in a particular subject. It was a way to prove what we had learned or what we hadn't learned, where we had grown as a student, where we hadn't grown. And it was a measurement in that particular moment. And can you see the issue as you start to spin this thing in your head this morning? The idea of testing God? Just go there with me for a minute. Right? Think about this. This is serious sin when we start talking about testing God. Us, teeny, tiny, imperfect, ignorant, fallen people, created by God, okay? Made by the one we're testing. And we're telling him, hey, you all come in here and you sit down. That's what we're saying. Y'all sit down because I got some questions for you. And you're gonna come through on this thing, right? I'm gonna test you and see where you come from or where you're gonna land on this. Where we're telling the God of the universe, right? The creator, the sustainer, the redeemer, the ultimate judge, the perfect one, the holy one. We're telling him, hey, you sit down. We're gonna put you on trial. Folks, can you see really the blasphemy that's behind this? When we come to testing God in this moment. And it's funny. I mean, and we're going to look at him. And what we're saying is, not only are we going to ask you the questions, we're going to test you. Then we're going to grade you and tell you how you did. I mean, who are we? And this is what's going on when we're testing. And this is why the scripture is telling us, don't test God. All right, there's one exception, right, in the Old Testament that we know about, right? Malachi chapter 3, some of you guys are familiar with this, all right? But in that particular passage, we're told to put God to test with our money, right? Where he's like, hey, you give, and you see if you can outgive me, right? Now, where's the one area where we don't really test God, right, as people? We just kind of sit back and just kind of go, you know, on that one, I'm not playing there. Again, who are we on this thing? And by the way, just to that note, maybe that's your step, man. Maybe that's something where God's even just kind of squeezing you on this thing. And he's saying, you know what? I do want you to put me to test with your money. I dare you. Test me on that thing. Extra $10, extra $100, whatever it is, I dare you to test me with that because you can't outgive me on this. And yet we don't play there. And yet, how many times when we're in the wilderness, much like the children of Israel, how many times in the wilderness do we start with, God, prove yourself to me? We demand from him. I want miracles. I want signs. I want healings. I want provisions. I want it now. We start with that rather than, God, am I passing your test? Right? We start with ourselves as the baseline that we've got it dialed in and we got this thing right. Now, God, you give me some kind of sign, some kind of wonder. Straight truth on this, church. God has been faithful to us. He has shown us signs. Has he not?
Has he not performed miracles in our lives or around us? Has he not gone above and beyond in ways that are just mind-blowing in the way that he answers our prayers? And yet the next time we're in the wilderness moment, we look at him and go, do it again. Right? As if one time isn't enough. Folks, hear me on this. As if the redemption of our dark, hardened heart isn't enough proof that God is good. We look at him and go, go again. Do it again, right? We do this thing in our life. And so the warning on this navigating the Christian life thing, what he'd start in Exodus chapter 17 is say, hey, rule number one, don't test God. Don't test him, okay? Number two, don't harden. Do not harden, right? Do not test, but secondly, do not harden. What he's talking about is our heart in this particular moment. And the pressure of the moment that they were experiencing here for the third time, right, you would think should have pushed them, number one, to breathe, okay? That's a piece of advice I got once. Rule number one in all of life, breathe. Because if you don't follow rule number one, it doesn't matter what rule number two is, right? So breathe. Right, so it should have pushed them to breathe, think, and then pray. Instead, in that moment, that pressure, that despair moved them to harden and to hurry themselves to murmuring and grumbling. That was their response. This is captured in the Psalm, Psalm 106, verse 9. Okay? Psalm 106, verse 9, it says, thus he rebuked the Red Sea, and it dried up, and he led them through the deeps as through the wilderness. So he saved them from the hand of the one who hated them and redeemed them from the hand of the enemy. The waters covered their adversaries. Not one of them was left. He goes on and he says, then they believed his words. They sang his praise. They quickly forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel. Folks, honestly, we could take that and kind of slap it on 21st century America, right? Okay? Now, also, Psalm 95, starting in verse 7, this is what the psalmist says. He says, if you would hear his voice, do not harden your hearts, as at Meribah, as in the day of Massah in the wilderness, when your fathers tested me, they tried me, though they had seen my work, right? He's like, you've seen this happen. You've seen it in front of you this way, and yet you hardened your heart. They put me to test, God's saying. They demanded proof, even though they had seen the miracle. Folks, you ever done that? When we talk about a hardened heart, what are we talking about? Right? To have a hardened heart means to keep seeing God's work and to willfully forget and to willfully go your own way and your own plan and your own power. It's like, I know better. God, you may have got it done there, but I don't know if you're going to get it done tomorrow. That's a hard heart. God, you've been faithful to me up to this point, but I bet you're going to, right? Do some of you, honestly, have you ever lived in that moment, that season, maybe you're in it right now today, where you're just going, I just know I'm a day away from the shoe dropping on me. Because that's how God deals with me. We respond like that, don't we? Where we can harden our heart even though we've seen these dynamic works in front of us. And folks, honestly, in light of this idea of do not harden, let me ask you, do you hear the urgency in Psalm 95 today if you hear his voice? Do not harden your heart, right? Maybe this is the words that you need this morning. Maybe even in this moment as you're listening today, if you hear his voice right now, this sermon, this Sunday, this moment, it's not even like me trying to preach or communicate something to you. You're right now in your moment, and God is speaking to the very depths of your heart, saying, hey, no more hardening on this. Respond to my voice. Respond to my leading on this. I mean, my challenge to you this morning as God is speaking through his words to us about do not harden in this is what he's saying and what I would encourage us on this. You don't wait till tomorrow on this. You don't wait till we're done with this service. I mean, literally, as God moves and speaks, you don't have to take any more notes in that moment. Man, anchor down on that. Deal with what it is that God is revealing to you in the moment, right? Don't wait till next week. Don't wait till you get older on this. Don't wait here. I mean, I hear this all the time. I'm going to take care of that after I'm done with this season of life. Folks, we wait for that season of life to be over. It's never over. There's always the next season. Okay? And so God is saying with urgency right now, don't forget what I've done. Don't forget what I've provided. Don't forget what I've said. Hear my voice and respond this morning. Okay? Don't harden your heart. Okay? So the list, right, the warning is a Christ follower. Don't test. Don't harden. Number three, don't reject. Don't reject. Look at verse 5. It says, then the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand your staff with which you struck the Nile and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock and the water will come out of it and the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel, right? And so as we come, honestly, when you come to these couple of verses, there's a number of fascinating questions and actually some really kind of difficult questions you got to ask about this particular, these couple of verses. We're not going to ask all those questions. We're not going to look at them all this morning. But let me just point out a couple of things to you. Number one, that word Horeb, where have we heard that before? Okay? Horeb, that's where the burning bush took place. So Moses is back where he first encountered God. So he encounters God. He's the sheep farmer, right? He goes to Egypt after being commissioned by God. He's now come back to Horeb. We're also going to find out that it's in this spot. This is another name for Mount Sinai. Okay? This is where God is going to come down. He's going to deliver the Ten Commandments in this moment. So the significant location that they've now wandered back to. I mean, almost, right? I mean, we could sit back and go, isn't it a coincidence that their wanderings led them to that spot? I think God has a plan on this. To bring him to this moment, to see God at work again in this moment. And as you see this spot, and it says, notice what it says in verse 6. It says, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb. And if you go back to that passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, around verse 4, right, it talks about the rock there, the rock that will follow. Okay, what are we talking about? Okay, as a matter of fact, I mean, as I was doing some reading on this, there's rabbinical tradition that would say literally that this rock at Horeb literally followed the Israelites around during their wanderings. Okay, and you know, they believed it that way, that it was literally just like following them around that way. As a matter of fact, other teachers in that time would have said that, okay, well, it didn't really get up and follow them around like that. They literally rolled it with them where they went, almost as a portable well, okay, for water. Those are some ways to look at this thing, or I think we can take Paul's admonition on this and really the straight truth on this. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 that the rock was Jesus. Significant for us, okay, to see this and to grab on to this is that the rock was Christ, which means that Christ was present in all of their wilderness journeys. Let me tell you something today, 21st century, Christ is present for all of your wilderness journeys. Church, I don't know if we get that. Christ is present for all of your wilderness journeys. Let me just bring it one more time. As you wander, as he leads you, Christ is present in all of your wilderness journeys. What a promise. And what he's saying here is don't reject that. Don't kick against that. Don't quarrel against that, right? I mean, we do that at times, right? I mean, where we can forget and where we don't appreciate and where we don't take in the fact that, yes, there are wilderness times in our life. I mean, think about this for just a minute. We sit back and go, man, I must be doing something wrong to be in the wilderness. And yet, as a follower of Jesus, he leads us all into the wilderness. He led his son into the wilderness, right? Jesus is with us in the wilderness journeys. He's with you. So do not reject that. Do not push against that. And so in light of that, I mean, here's that list, right? Here you go. You want to be an effective Christ follower, right? Do not test. Do not harden. Do not reject. Okay? So where do we go? What do we do with this? What's the takeaway? Jeff, why would we spend the time on this looking at this? And we're talking about lists this to help us journey as a follower of Jesus. Let me just say this morning, all right? It would be easy for me to look at you and say, hey, you want to be a good follower of Jesus, stop your grumbling. Stop being a grumbler. We could turn this into a moralistic little story in a hurry, couldn't we? Where all you need to do is stop grumbling. Jesus is going to get, you're going to get points with Jesus. Just stop grumbling. Grow up, right? We do things like that, and we're looking for the formula. You'd be looking at me saying, Pastor Jeff, I don't want to be a grumbler. How do I not be a grumbler? And I'd look at you and say, don't test the Lord. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, don't harden your heart. Okay, I'll do my best. Don't reject Jesus. And you're like, sweet, I didn't do that one, right? And we can make it about what we're not doing. Church, I mean, honestly, hasn't a lot of our following of Jesus been about what we're not doing? I mean, we sit down and we make a list a mile long. Some of you love Jesus way more than others because your list is way longer, right? Dude, it's color-coded. It's on a spreadsheet, right? Because you're serious about this stuff. Man, you go, I mean, you are all in, right? You journal like crazy, right? You got that thing, you got your favorite Bible verse. Man, you're on that. You got your favorite pastor quote behind everything you're not going to do, right? Because you're all in on that, right? I don't do this. I don't do that. Right? We gravitate that way. And let me just tell you this. As Christ followers this way, we believe that if we just follow the formula, we get Jesus points and we're ahead of the next person. If I just have the formula down right, I'm going to excel as a Christ follower. And then if you ever watch somebody kind of navigate a moment and you ask them, what did you do? Right? And they tell you, and then you go take what they told you and you try to apply it to what you're doing, and has it ever just like not worked? Like every time. Because God is saying, that's not the point. It's not the point. He made it straight with us on this thing. That our primary mission, hear me, church, on this, our primary mission is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. That's it. That's our mission. To glorify His name and to enjoy Him forever. If I can be honest with you as your pastor this morning, man, not only am I not really so much interested, but honestly, I don't think God is so much interested in what we aren't doing, but what we are doing. I don't think that he's all like sitting back and just going, Dobish, man, you're like a literated list of not to do's, man. That's really cute. But what are you doing? That's nice you're not doing that, but what are you doing? Because in your list of I'm not doing all these things, where am I glorified and where are you enjoying me in that? Because honestly, what it is it's like a badge I wear around going, man, I'm pretty darn righteous. I'm pretty darn serious about my faith on this. And I want to encourage you this morning, take away on this thing. Honestly, our chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. And if there's anything I could maybe give you as advice as we navigate life as Christ followers, is not to get so wrapped up in what we're not doing, but to consume ourselves with what we are doing. And to do that, to see that, we look to Jesus. Okay? We have to look to Him for our salvation. Man, we need to look to Him for our day-to-day, don't we? I mean, we need Him. We need to see Him. And so what I'm going to do on this thing is I'm just going to kind of give you, I'm going to take you on this. I want you to go to Matthew chapter 4 with me this morning. Okay? Matthew chapter 4. And I think we can learn some pretty neat things from the words of Jesus on this and things that we can take with us. And I want to give you three things. I think they coincide and they match up with the do nots in Exodus chapter 17. But it's a positive way to look at this thing. Not so much what you shouldn't be doing, but this is where you should be, okay? This is what we should be doing, okay? And the first thing is this, is that we go all in with His words, okay? That we go all in. This has got back to the Jim Elliot thing, that wherever you are, man, be all there, okay? We want to be all in on this. We want to be consumed with His words. Look at chapter 4. It says, then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness. I want you to stop here, and I don't quite have this all figured out. Been chewing on this and thinking about this thing, but man, it hit me probably like never before on this. But notice, He was led up by the Spirit. I think sometimes we go, man, I've been led into the wilderness because of my sinful decisions or by the temptation of the devil. Let me tell you something. Man, the Spirit is out in front of us. When we talk about him advocating for us, he advocates because he's in front of us. Okay? The Holy Spirit is not the weak sister of the Trinity. Does that make sense, church? All right? That he's out there. He's in front of us on that thing. And so Jesus was led up by the Spirit. Hear me on this. As we go into the wilderness, the Spirit's out in front of you as well. There should be some hope there for you. All right, but Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he then became hungry. And the tempter came and said to him, "If you're the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." Folks, I don't know if you've ever fasted for 40 days. Okay, it's a long time without any food. You're probably a little hungry. Okay, you're Jesus. The idea of turning stones into bread, not even a hardship, okay? And that's what he says to him. He says, turn these stones into bread. But he answered and he said, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but he shall live on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Church, I want to encourage you this morning. In life, as we pursue Jesus, as we try to navigate what's in front of us, be all in on his words, because Jesus himself says that real life happens according to every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Do we buy that this morning? I mean, we know that we're supposed to have a quiet time. We know we're supposed to be on a Bible reading plan. We know that we're supposed to, right? But hear me on this. Do we live on every word that comes from the mouth of the Father? That's where it's at. And I'm here to tell you this morning that if you're struggling, we're wrestling with this moment, it's not so much, again, putting the emphasis on don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, as much as it is coming, God, please speak to me. I just want your words. And if you're struggling on that thing, you're saying, man, I'm in my Bible reading plan and I'm like doing circles and like numbers right now, or, you know, it's August, you know, you've probably passed, you know, numbers, you're probably all the way to Deuteronomy at this point. And, you know, on this, but you're spinning your, just, you know what, would you just turn in the Gospels, find the red letters and just let Jesus speak to you. Just let him speak to you. Folks, we need to be all in on his word. Not because we're trying to prove something, not try to earn our position in the kingdom as it is because Jesus himself told us that we live based on the word that comes out of the mouth of God. Folks, we've got it, don't we? We've got it. This is not a subject to be mastered like geometry or some other class. This is like a treasure that God has given us. To come and just say, God, please speak to me, change me, encourage me, transform me, convict me on this thing. And so my encouragement to you, all in with his words. Number two, all in with his works. All in with his works, because it goes on. Notice verse 5, it says, then the devil took him into the holy city and had him stand on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. And then Jesus said to him, on the other hand, it's written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. If there was anybody in the world who could have jumped off that and God would have probably swooped down to save, it's probably his own boy, don't you think? And yet he's saying, the scripture tells me, don't put God to the test. In this moment, what Satan is tempting Jesus with on this is this idea of the works or the hand of God. Where he's saying he took him on this pinnacle moment, right? The pinnacle of the city, the highest spot. And he's saying, will you God, you know, will God come through for you in this particular moment? And folks, hear me on this. We need to be all in on his works. And the best way for us to be all in on his works is to have some kind of running list of his works in your life, his provision. Don't you think? We need to be reminded of how he's moved and worked in your life. Folks, I'm not trying to be too goofy on this thing at all, but please, I hope it just blows your mind that every single day you get up and you turn on a faucet in your house and there's clean water. That's not common outside of this country. That there's not only food, but we have more food. Right? I mean, think about that moment where you can walk to the cupboard in your house and there's selection of food. Not just a food, but there's selection in your house. And you have the ability to cook it. It's there. Folks, so all I'm saying to you is there are works that God has performed and is performing right now. And we want to be all in on that. So that way we don't have to chase after, well, I'm going to jump off the pinnacle here and have God catch me, right? Because he has to prove himself one more time to me, right? Man, we sit down. I mean, folks, don't we at times when we look at other people and go, God must love them more because of the way he's blessing them. He gives them this. They've got that. Every time they do, right? Have you ever been there? You ever struggle with that? Hear me on this. God, if you will take the time, my challenge, write down those works. Spend the time with your spouse. Spend the time with your kids. Where have you seen God work? And we got to watch it this weekend. I mean, some of you guys here in this service, really good friends with Chuck and Linda Walker, right? Chuck was airlifted this week. He's been struggling with his health. Had a moment on Friday where the bleeding that they were trying to stop wasn't stopping. Systems were starting to shut down. Linda needed to get to Denver. They tried one last procedure, and the report on Saturday morning, bleeding had stopped. His kidneys started to function again. See, and we can sit back and go, dynamic medicine. Or we can say, amazing God, who provides the knowledge to be able to do something like that, right? Dynamic work that God does in and around us every day. I was reminded this week, okay, a year ago, about this time, a guy in South Dakota started calling me. He's a good friend of my mom's, took care of him. He took care of my mom a bunch, looked out for her, and said, hey, we're bringing your mom at Christmas. Last year was supposed to be Christmas with my family here. Honestly, going to be straight with you on that moment. He calls and says, we're bringing your mom. And I'm like, oh, please don't. And I mean that. It was just like, because we value our time together. It was our Christmas together. And he was determined. My family's never been to Durango, and your mom's coming. And he literally put my mom in a van. I mean, like, virtually, like, put her in the van to bring her out here. Greatest week. Greatest gift that God would ever give me. Because he knew. Folks, there are works all around us. And what I'm saying is, instead of sitting back and, I mean, again, we focus. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this. I'm not. And people look at us and go, you are so disciplined. What's better at the end of the day? Somebody walking up to you and giving you a fist bump telling you you're so disciplined in your self-righteousness, or sitting back and watching God's hand at work around you? Does this make sense? And so, folks, honestly, instead of going, we're not going to do this, let's just go all in on where he's working, okay? So we're all in on his words. We're all in on his works. Number three, and I think this is absolutely imperative, we're all in on his whereabouts, okay? We're all in on his whereabouts. This is what Jesus is saying, verse 8. Again, the devil took him to the very high mountain, showed him all the kingdom of the world and their glory, all the kingdoms, and he said to him, all these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Then Jesus said to him, go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Then the devil left him, and behold, the angels came, began to minister to him. And when we talk about being all in on his whereabouts, folks, there is, I mean, honestly, if we're begging God to do anything in our heart, have us be enraptured, captured, enthralled by, owned by the presence of God. I mean, we want to know where God is at, and we want to join him there, don't we? I mean, we want to know where our Father is at, and we want to run to where his presence is. We want to be there. That's the most important thing. More than kingdoms, more than self-glory on this, is the very presence of God. And he says, in here, this is what you're going to do. Worship the Lord your God and serve him only. And we talk about worship, right? Worship is an encounter It's a response to an encounter with God. To have an encounter of God, where do you got to be? Where he's at, right? He says, worship God in that moment, okay? Sunday mornings, Mondays, Wednesdays, Saturdays. Find where he's at and jump in there. Find where he's at, crawl into his lap, find where he's at, join him in that and follow him, run around with him in that moment. Folks, have it be the desire, the consumption of our heart that God, I'm get up in the morning, I'm going to look where you're at, and I'm going to join you in that. That I'm going to go all in on your whereabouts on this thing, not only so I can worship you, to have this response to an encounter with God. Hear me on this. Man, we want you to come and corporately, uniquely, we respond to God together in this place. It's amazing. It's fantastic. But here's the deal. You can do the same thing this afternoon. Right? You can have that encounter with God this afternoon. Hopefully, when you come in here on a Sunday, man, you are so saturated from encounters with God that you can't help but spill over when you get here. And it just makes the experience that much better for the people across the aisle from you. Does that make sense? Okay? So we go on that thing, finding his whereabouts, but not only to worship him, but it says to serve him. This is the best part, folks. When we look at this thing, being Christ followers on this, man, God has gifted us for input. He's gifted us on this thing. So we come, the economy of God, those gifts are given so that we give that into somebody else to strengthen them, to make them better. Does that make sense on that? The Christian life at its core is one of us taking what God is giving us and giving it away. We make the church better when we come in to give away on Sunday morning, not to take in. Now, in God's economy as well, guaranteed, you're going to take in. It's going to happen. But that's not primary. Primary is to come and to serve the one that we've encountered, because we there's no room to take in. We got to spill over because he's filled us. We're just overwhelmed with him in this moment. So, folks, let me encourage us as we look at this. We come to the table. We try to follow Jesus on this. We can look at it and go, man, I'm gonna run out. I'm gonna work hard to not test the Lord and to not harden my heart and not reject him this week. Or we can run out the door this week and we can commit ourselves to go all in on his word. We can go all in on his works and we can go all in on his whereabouts. Folks, I don't know about you, but at the end of the day, I want to be close to him. I want to be filled with him, right? I want to see his works, and I want to hang on his words. Folks, I don't know where you're going to find more life. Chasing hard to prove yourself by a list of what I'm not going to do, or to be known by someone who walks close and follows the Father. So as Christ followers this morning, let's ask the Spirit to come, lead us to his words, lead us to his works to remember them, and lead us to his whereabouts for our good, and so we can give glory to his great and mighty name. Father, that's our prayer simply this morning. Lord, in a lot of ways, it's easier to just come up with a list of things to not do. And Father, change our hearts a bit today to come in and to jump in and commit ourselves to what's in front of us that we can do. And that's, Father, to hang on your words, to remember your works, and chase hard to find where you're at and anchor ourselves there. Father, help us to be a people committed to glorifying your name and enjoying you forever. And so, Lord, this morning, as you've spoken through your word, and as each person here has heard your voice, Father, help us to feel the urgency through your Spirit to not harden our hearts, to not turn away, to not put off something that you're doing in our hearts right now for a later time. But, Father, help us to come. Father, help us to surrender Father, help us to trust you as we take that next step and respond to your activity in our life. And we'll give you all the honor and all the glory of that. In the great name of Jesus, amen.